speak of worldliness, what comes into our minds? Probably we think of someone who is maybe deals with drunkenness or fornication, gambling, things of that nature. When we speak of materialism, what comes into our minds? Probably someone who just can't get enough things, or someone who's greedy, someone who's not content with what he has, and things of that nature. In the Gospel according to John, Jesus does not address these forms of worldliness and materialism, but something much more basic. In fact, most of the people to whom Jesus addressed, most of the people to whom he spoke, were people who were not worldly or materialistic in the classical way of thinking of those words. Most of the people to whom he spoke were people we would consider to be religious people. People who knew the scriptures. And yet, Jesus worked hard to get them to think about the Spirit. The flesh meant very little to Jesus. Even in non-worldly, non-materialistic ways. But people tried constantly to make him think, speak, and act according to the flesh. However, he fought their persuasions, showing that we should see everything in this world as a type or at least in a spiritual way. The flesh should point us to the Spirit. The natural is a type and a shadow of the spiritual. Even as we often say, the Old Testament and the things associated with it were types and shadows of the New Testament. So let us see the world in the same way in regards to things which are spiritual. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 shows at what Christians should be looking and why they should be looking at those things. In 2 Corinthians 4, verse 18, Paul writes, "We do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." And I want us to do that very thing today, that we might learn to see things as Jesus sees them or saw them when he was on the earth. Every chapter, I believe, in the Gospel according to John has a spiritual message. And I think I even made reference to this a couple of weeks ago, and I thought today would be a good time to give you a sample of what I was talking about. I would encourage you to read the Gospel according to John carefully and discover in every chapter that Jesus was steering people away from the world. Sometimes he was changing someone's thinking, and at other times he was merely using an illustration to again get people to see the Spirit. I have chosen 10 examples from the Gospel according to John, showing that there is more than this earth to our existence. Not merely that we have another life in another place after this life, but that we have another life now, even while we live on this materialistic world. Refuse to be caged in by thinking only in terms of this world, but rather use this world to propel you into the true world. Learn to see that God wants us to use this world to think about the greater world. Why then did God put us into this material existence instead of just putting us into heaven in the first place? He did it that we might understand the Spirit in heaven. In other words, He gave us this material and fleshly life first, so that we might understand some things before we can enter into heaven and understand fully the spiritual. That's because it is generally easier to understand that which is of the flesh before we can understand that which is of the Spirit. In John chapter 3, Jesus alluded to this process of human understanding when He was speaking to a teacher in Israel. And He was trying to get this teacher to see that although he was a teacher, he could not understand the spiritual, because he was having a hard time understanding the physical. So in verse 12, Jesus said, "If I have told you earthly things and you do not believe, how will you believe if I tell you heavenly things?" If we cannot understand the lesser, how can we understand the greater? And yet, in order to understand the greater, we first have to understand the lesser. So God has put us in this environment, not that we might be locked into it with our thinking, but that we might see this world as filled with types and shadows of the things that He really wants us to be thinking about. So let's look at the spiritual message of John. And you want to stay right there in John chapter 3. Same conversation with the same man by the name of Nicodemus. The man comes to Jesus with a compliment. Jesus does not even say thank you or address the compliment at all. But Jesus immediately gets into the Spirit, which is what He does constantly in the four gospel accounts. Here's what He said in verse 3. Jesus answered and said to him, "Most assuredly I say to you, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God." Nicodemus said to him, "How can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter a second time into his mother's womb and be born?" Jesus answered, "Most assuredly I say to you, unless one is born of water and the Spirit, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit." Here was an aged man who was a teacher in Israel, and the concept of a spiritual birth was foreign to him. Jesus introduces the idea, and what's the first thing that he thinks about? Entering into his mother the second time. Because he was locked into fleshly thinking. But I think what Jesus is showing us here is that we should see that the Spirit, or the birth of the body, is picturing the birth of the Spirit. Let us learn to see that when there is a baby born into this world, what God really wants to see is a new person being born in the Spirit. The natural birth is supposed to be really nothing more than a type or a shadow of the true birth, that is, the birth of the Spirit. For Jesus showed that the Spirit here is greater than the flesh. Now turn to the fourth chapter for the second example, John chapter 4. The first example is dealing with birth. Now the second one is water. Jesus has a conversation with a woman whose thinking is totally focused on water for the body. But look what he does with her, starting in verse 13. Jesus answered and said to her, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman said to her, or him, Sir, give me this water that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw. See, she's just thinking about the water that we put into our mouths and that our bodies use. And even after he explains the true water, she's still thinking about, give me the water you're talking about so I don't have to come to this well anymore. She's still locked into this world, having a hard time seeing that water for the body is nothing more than a symbol of the water that we need for the Spirit. When you take your next drink of water today, think about whether you're getting water to your spirit also. Number three, the same chapter, meat. Now let's look at meat. Verses 31 through 34, Jesus has now finished talking with the woman. His disciples were away in town buying some food for the body. They come to him with the food, but look what happens. Look again how he turns it into a discussion of the Spirit. Starting in verse 31. In the meantime, his disciples urged him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But he said to them, I have food to eat of which you do not know. Therefore the disciples said to one another, Has anyone brought him anything to eat? Jesus said to them, My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Even the disciples who have been spending all their time with the great spiritual person himself. When he takes the conversation and turns it into a spiritual one, they can't understand what he's talking about. They can only see things as it relates to the body. But Jesus here is showing that even as we consume food and think about it constantly, so let us consume the will of God, thinking of it constantly. Number four, now in the fifth chapter, danger. Jesus has just healed a man, and here's what happens in verses 13 and 14. But the one who was healed did not know who it was, because he was being questioned by the Jewish leaders, and he didn't know who it was who had healed him. He knew it was some man, obviously, but he didn't know who the man was. For Jesus had withdrawn, a multitude being in that place. Afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, See, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. Well, what could be worse than a paralyzed body, which is what the man had? You see, when you have a serious health problem, there is a great temptation to think of nothing else. But focusing on that one problem of the body can cause us to miss other dangers. Other dangers that are worse. And in this case, Jesus was not speaking about another danger to the body, but of the spirit. That's why he told the man, don't sin anymore. Because if you continue to sin, something worse will happen to you than paralysis of the body. There is something far worse that can happen to us than bad health. Often in America, we say, as long as you have your health, you have everything. But is that true? If you have your health, and you live in sin, you are dead, according to the Scriptures, and shall experience the second death. But if you are sick in the body, but alive in the spirit, you shall go to the place where there is no illness. Number 5, the next chapter, John chapter 6, bread. Jesus has a discussion with some people. He's just fed them bread for the body, and now they're locked into that thinking. They can't think of anything else. They just see that Jesus is a free source of food. But in the conversation that follows, he tries to get them to think about the Spirit and how much they need bread for the Spirit or for the soul. So in verse 51 it says, I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. But watch how the Jews respond to that in John 6:52. The Jews therefore quarreled among themselves, saying, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? They thought Jesus was speaking about cannibalism. They can only think about what he is able to give me for my body, not what he can give me for my spirit. Now watch what he himself does next in verse 63. Something he didn't, well, I guess he did do it in some of the other conversations, but here he gets real obvious, very plain about what he's trying to address with them. He says in verse 63, it is the Spirit who gives life. The flesh profits nothing. Now watch this. The words that I speak to you are spirit, and they are life. There he comes right out and says, I'm speaking to you spiritually. But the thousands of people who were there that day, there were only 12 who were able to finally understand he was speaking about the Spirit. And all the thousands left him because they thought that he wanted them to eat his body and to drink his blood. They didn't understand what he was trying to give to them in the Spirit. It was impossible, evidently, for them to think in spiritual or symbolic terms. And remember, these are not worldly Romans that he's speaking to. These are people who had the Bible taught to them every day that they went to school. They went to the Sabbath. They had known the Scriptures all their lives, but they were still locked into the body. As bread is necessary for the life of the body, so Jesus is necessary for the life of the Spirit. If you eat the best bread for the body, but do not eat the bread for the Spirit, then we're malnourished and we shall die. Number 6, the next chapter, chapter 7. Departing. John 7, starting at verse 33, says this. Then Jesus said to them, I shall be with you a little while longer, and then I go to him who sent me. You will seek me and not find me. And where I am, you cannot come. Then the Jews said among themselves, where does he intend to go that we shall not find him? Does he intend to go to the dispersion among the Greeks and teach the Greeks? When it came to traveling, they could only think about traveling on the earth. And clearly, they didn't understand who it was who had sent him. Because the one who had sent him was not living on the earth. And he's still not on the earth. He's someplace else. They could only think of traveling on this earth. The new preoccupation of Americans is often the same. Therefore, brethren, let our travel to heaven be more important to us than our travels on the earth. And later, Jesus would show how they could follow him. And I'm sure that's why what you want to do, and that's why you're here today, because you are concerned about your travel to heaven. Well, keep your nose buried in the book, and God will teach you all that you need to know. Number 7, the next chapter in John. John chapter 8. Bondage. Starting at verse 32, Jesus said, "And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." They answered him, "We are Abraham's descendants, and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free?" Jesus answered them, "Most assuredly I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin." Now, what were they thinking? Because, you know, according to the body, they had been in bondage to many nations. Egypt, Babylon, Persia, and at that time, Rome. I mean, that's what I would have said to them. I would have said, "What do you mean you've never been in bondage to anyone? Who's ruling over you now? It's Rome." But that would still be dealing with them on a physical level. Jesus didn't even deal with that. He went immediately to the Spirit. Now, maybe they were trying to think spiritually here. Maybe that's why they said, "Well, we've never been in bondage to anyone. Spiritually, Jesus." So maybe that was an attempt there. But either way, they missed the truth. "For they did not know of the bondage of sin, which is worse than political bondage." Let us not think that we have it made if we have political freedom. Number 8. The next chapter, John chapter 9. Blindness. In verse 2 it says, "And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind?" See, as they were by the temple, there was a man who was begging, and he was blind. The disciples want to know, well, how did he get like that? Did he sin or did his parents sin? But then look down at verse 40. It says, "Then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, Are we blind also? Jesus said to them, If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you see, we see, therefore your sin remains." You see, what happened was, is Jesus got into a discussion with them, and various things happened, and it's almost as though they started to realize, oh, we need to see things spiritually here. But they still couldn't get it. And that's why he said, "No, you're still blind. You don't understand what is going on here." They attempted to understand things spiritually or maybe even symbolically, but they were so used to fleshly thinking that they couldn't do it. And that's because it requires a total rebuilding of the mind. When you come to Christ, when you come to the Scriptures, you just have to take your old way of thinking, take your mind, and just get rid of it. And learn a whole new way of thinking. Number 9. Go clear over to John chapter 18 now. Government. Here Jesus is at one of his Roman trials. And he's speaking with Pilate. And here's how the conversation goes, starting in verse 33. "Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus and said to him, Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered him, Are you speaking this for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me? Pilate answered, Am I a Jew? Your own nation and chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, so that I should not be delivered to the Jews, but now my kingdom is not from here. A citizen, in this case a leader, of the world's superpower, could only see things politically. Let us not see God's government as being inferior to the governments of the world. Jesus spoke plainly here, but Pilate never got the point. Let us make sure that we do. But there's another government, and it's far greater than the one that we live here under on this earth. Number 10, from John chapter 19, authority. Still speaking with the same politician, here's another part of their conversation in verses 10 and 11. Then Pilate said to him, "Are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you?" Jesus answered, "You can have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." Well, Paul Pilate was still trapped in worldly ways, believing that Rome or similar entities were the only way to view government. Human governments, though, should lead us to see the need for divine government. Now think about this, and you want to turn to Romans chapter 8. And while you're doing that, think about this. Okay, if all these people, or most of these people, of course not all of them, like Pilate for example, but most of these people we've looked at, Jesus was talking to people who were religious people, who should have understood the Spirit, but they didn't. Well, that could be said about them. What about me? Am I so trapped into thinking according to this world that I'm missing the Spirit? How can I know if I am of the Spirit? Or am I worldly and materialistic? And not in those classical ways that we think of those words, but rather in the ways like the people here in John. Well, look at Romans chapter 8 and verse 5, where Paul wrote, "For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh. But those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit." Okay, so where do I have my mind? Where is it set? For example, let us put the spiritual conditions of the land above the weather conditions. Have you thought about how much the weather and its convenience dominates our thinking? Well, you know, we have to deal with it. There's a lot about it, especially if you have a job where you work outside. And yet still, sometimes it dominates our thinking. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus shows that this favorite topic of conversation was something that the Jews also focus upon, and yet our ability to be experts at weather should cause us to be experts at something else. Listen to this. Matthew 16, verses 2 and 3. Jesus said, "When it is evening, you say, 'It will be fair weather, for the sky is red.' And in the morning, 'It will be foul weather today, for the sky is red.' And threatening. Hypocrites! You know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times." Well, see, he was right. I mean, we know how to look at the weather. We can judge what is going to follow. Well, look at the times and look at the scriptures, he says. There's something far greater there at which we should be experts. In Acts chapter 14, Paul teaches that the weather should make us think about God and not our convenience or inconvenience. In Acts 14, 17, he said to a group of people that God did not leave himself without witness in that he did good, gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. And from that he was saying, therefore we should worship the true God. So let us understand the weather, but don't stop with the weather. Don't stop with thinking about this world. But let thinking about this world propel us into thinking about God and the world in which He lives and the world where we shall eventually be living. Therefore, let us be more concerned about God's government than human government. Let us be more concerned about heavenly retirement than earthly retirement. Let us be more concerned about the condition of the church than the condition of our homes. Let us be more concerned about the health of the spirit than the health of the body. The earth is not the end, but the means to an end. The gospel according to John takes everything earthly and fleshly and shows a corresponding heavenly or spiritual truth. Just like Jesus when he spoke his parables. His parables, he took things of this world but was using them to make us think about the things of the spiritual world. Again, I encourage you to read the gospel according to John. Look at every chapter the way we've just looked at a few chapters today. Less than half of the book. And you will be amazed, I believe, by what you see there. And this is all a matter of serious consequence. Jesus came to shift our thinking from this world to the Spirit, and if we fail to do that, we make His entrance into this world vain. Jesus has given us gifts that we might love Him. If we fail to be spiritual, then we're falling in love with the gifts rather than the giver. Give yourself to Him this morning. Perhaps you've been thinking about doing that. Why delay any longer? Is this not a good time? If you've never been baptized into Christ, we've got a baptistry ready, we have clothes ready, we have everything ready. We just need you to make that crucial decision here in just a few seconds. If you want to come to Christ, you can do so right now as we stand and sing.